folks. This is Steve Donahue with another episode from the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. This is episode 6, and this is going to be on stewardship farming for abundance. I'm going to explain that term here in just a moment, but this should be kind of a foundational episode on what we do on our farm and how farming can build abundance as well as restore some of the environmental issues that are facing us, and so that we can pass on to another generation a better environment than what we currently have. And I believe one of the ways in which we can do that, as well as providing some substantial amount of food for ourselves and some liberty through that farming, is through a family farm, or at least a measure of farming in our own homes. And so I look forward to bringing this to you. You'll be able to find a lot of value to it. But first, let's talk about a little bit of business. First of all, visit our website. We've got some new resources up there and some pages you can, or some links to various books that I have read or recommend that you read. And hopefully you'll be able to find those as valuable. Also, I want you to tell a friend if you like what you hear on this. We're looking to have some more audience and listeners. You can also now finally download this from iTunes. It took me a while to finally get this up and running on iTunes, but you can download it on iTunes. So visit us there. Visit us at Facebook and rate us on iTunes and make comments however you can to let people know about us. We'd appreciate that, and I really thank you for listening. And also, finally, consider becoming a legacy partner in our Legacy Partner program. For $30 a year, you can help support the show at about 25 cents an episode or less, and be able to keep us growing the content as well as the resources available on the website. So consider that. And that just about takes care of the business section. So, stewardship farming for abundance. And these are the principles that we're going to follow in this, and I'm going to talk about those in just a second. But there's all different kinds of principles when it comes to farming. And if you look at permaculture, you look at biointensive gardening, you look at organic gardening, all of these different ways in which people have described the ways in which they do farming. And of course, I'm going to bring up another one, which I call stewardship farming. Stewardship farming, I believe, is a way to describe farming that is conducted as stewards of the land, and understanding that God is the author and God is the creator of the land in which we live, and that He is the owner of it all. Even though I believe in personal liberty and property rights, and I believe those are essential to developing abundance, but I also think that we ultimately know that God is the owner of all things. And so we're stewards of the land that He has entrusted to us. And whether you are only farming on the back patio, or on a 4x4 plot in your suburbs, or whether you've got a small farm like we do, or you've got a gigantic farm, these principles still apply. And you may not be able to use all of them to the same extent as others may, but certainly to the extent that you do use them, you'll be able to experience abundance. Now, why farming, and how is that related to a legacy, and how is that related to abundance? Well, we all need food, and food is one of the most essential building blocks of life. It is what keeps us alive. It is what maintains our life, and the quality of our food is instrumental to our own life. And certainly the way in which we produce that food has an impact not only on ourselves upon this generation, but also on generations to follow. And in addition to that, the way in which current agricultural systems operate, they are destroying the environment and depleting the topsoil and depleting humus matter, organic matter in the soils, and all kinds of ways in which they are destroying the environment in which we live, and passing on not a legacy of abundance to the generation to come, but a legacy of lack. And so you can look all over the nation, and you can see signs that the watering and the petroleum-based fertilizers and all of these kinds of things are depleting resources and not building up resources. And so stewardship farming involves restoring the earth and providing abundance through the food that we create. So my belief is that as Christians, whether we live in the country or whether we live in the suburbs or even if we live in the city and have a very small area, we need to be what is considered deliberate agrarians. Herrick Kimbrell, who I have a link to one of his books on our website, he actually coined that phrase, deliberate agrarian. And the idea is that there is a lifestyle that is conducive to abundance, and that lifestyle is an agrarian lifestyle. Now, again, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be living out in the country, although that certainly is beneficial, but it does mean that you have to be aware of the principles of the agrarian lifestyle and implement them. The Bible is full of principles related to this, and certainly the lifestyle of the people in the Bible was an agrarian lifestyle, and so the principles that they lived fell in line with that. And so the agrarian lifestyle is a lifestyle that is conducive to abundance and stewardship farming. So principle number one then, there's four principles to stewardship farming for abundance. And then principle number one is farming abundance is provided by God and reflected in His character. God is a God of abundance. He created the entire universe, and He has made all things so that it creates abundance. And so Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, this is right after the creation. He is speaking, of course, to Adam and Eve. And He says, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is in the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food." So God has created this. And, you know, we don't really even know all that has been destroyed because of the fall, or all that has been caused to become extinct, or what really the original design of the Garden of Eden was like, and what that was, what all was involved, all the different kinds of diverse plant species that was originally given to Adam as food. And certainly even now we are learning more and more about different plants that have medicinal value and different plants that have healing effects and things of that nature. And so we are beginning to relearn some of those things that were lost. And certainly primitive cultures have some of those still intact, and we have lost some of those, but we're beginning to regain them. And God has provided an abundance for us in His creation. And He tells us that it is all for our benefit for the most part. And He's allowed us to take part in that. And then, of course, after the flood, the environment changed significantly. And He then allows us to eat not only the herbs and the green trees and all the things that He mentions in chapter 1, but now He goes on and speaks also of animal products. In chapter 9, verses 2 and 3 says, "And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth and every bird of the air and on all that move on the earth and on all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand. Every moving thing that moves shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs." And so we have an abundance of vegetation. We have an abundance of animals. And God has given these to us for our abundance so that we might be able to prosper and that we might be able to grow in abundance with them. And He has created in each of these kinds, as the Bible calls them, an amazing amount of abundance in themselves. If you take just for a moment, just imagine a seed, like a tomato seed, and you take that, there's within that one seed, there is a genetic ability for that seed to sprout at the right temperature, but not when it's too cold, otherwise it'll freeze. So it sprouts just right temperature, soil temperature, and then it's able to make its way from underground outside the ground, and it's able to open up its leaves and be able to access the sun and take that sun that's in the leaves and produce food for the plant so that it can grow. And then it produces fruit within itself, tomatoes, and those fruit then have hundreds of seeds that are produced throughout the season from that one seed that's planted. Now that is a description of abundance, and that's the kind of creation that God has made for us. It's a creation of abundance. It's a creation that has diversity, that has adaptability. The genetic makeup allows it to be able to these plants to be able to grow and to change based upon circumstances and overcome certain obstacles and droughts and all these kinds of things. There's genetic makeup within them so that there is an abundance, and God has provided that for us. So principle number one is farming abundance is provided by God and reflected in His character. God is a God of abundance, and He's provided that for us. Secondly, principle number two is abundance requires tending with anticipation. So in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, when God had placed the garden there and then placed Adam in the garden, He says, He blessed them and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it." So he gives them a couple commands there. He says, first of all this earth is given to you, fill it. That is to occupy it and then subdue it. Now the idea of subdue does not mean to trash it. It doesn't mean to destroy it, but it means to rule over it, to have dominion over it. And he uses that word, in fact, later on. He says, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Now, this is, of course, different than some perspective out there that are environmentalists who think that man is on the same plane as the animals. And so, you know, we can't harm an animal, even if it might harm a human, by not doing so. Well, that's not what the scriptures say. The scriptures say that man is to subdue all these things. He is to be over it. He's to have dominion over them. And so that gives us the proper perspective. And yet at the same time, we are given this to care for and to tend it and to make sure that it is cared for well. So in Genesis chapter 2, verse 5, he says, Before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. And so there again, he exposes the idea that man was placed on the earth to tend it, to take care of it. And the word till here doesn't mean like we might think of plowing up with a big plow here. It basically means to take care of, to tend, to manage. And then chapter 3 of Genesis, verse 17, it says, Then to Adam he said, Because you have heeded the voice of your wife, and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, You shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. So we have to understand that the creation has been subject to the fall. And although the creation, when God designed it, was perfect in all of its detail and in everything that it contained, the world in which we currently live, so the earth has been subjected to the curse as a result of the fall. And so it's not like it was originally designed to be. And this also is a difference from many who, for example, believe in observing nature and following the patterns of nature. Now, as we'll talk about in just a minute, I believe that God has placed certain patterns and certain systems in place so that we can follow them. But for example, the permaculture movement has an understanding that, you know, nature is perfect, and that if we follow natural system, then, you know, everything will be fine. Well, nature has an element of the curse to it. And so we need to overcome that curse as we tend and care for the garden. And then Proverbs 28, verse 19, it says, He who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty enough. So there again, the idea is that we are to work it, we are to tend it, we are to care for it. Proverbs 12, verse 11, He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding. And then Proverbs 27, verses 23 through 27, it says, Be diligent to know the state of your flocks, and attend to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does the crown endure to all generations. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will provide your clothing, and the goats the price of a field. You shall have enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and the nourishment of your maidservants. So again, the idea is there that we are to take diligent care, to tend for the things that we have, to take care of not only our possessions and our wealth in the case of the flocks and the herds, but also of his creation. And when we do that, there is an abundance that is a result of that. And then in chapter 8, verses 19 through 22, it reiterates the point that we live in a fallen world in addition to the remarkable created world that he has made. For the earnest expectation of creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pains together until now. And so the creation itself is waiting for its redemption, its time of redemption. And of course, we read in the scriptures that one day Jesus will come back. He will renew the earth. And I don't know exactly what that will be like. We know that paradise was lost after the fall and that paradise will be restored when he comes back. And to the extent to which that happens, we look forward to it. But in the process, in the meantime, we are given the command or the instruction to be diligent and to be careful and to attend to the earth and to the creation that he's given to us. So principle number two is abundance requires tending with anticipation. And of course, the anticipation is that he will return. So principle number three then is abundance is found in working with God's created laws, patterns, and cycles. Abundance is found in working with God's created laws, patterns, and cycles. I've already mentioned this briefly, but God has placed into his world certain laws and certain patterns, certain systems, so that as we follow those patterns and those systems, we are able to experience the abundance that he has for us. It's when we work against those patterns, when we work against those systems, then it becomes more difficult for us. And unfortunately, today, man has become so prideful of scientific and technological advancements that we are disregarding the patterns and the systems that God has put into place for our abundance, and we are trying to overcome those through technology when it comes to scientific farming. And as a result, we are destroying the earth rapidly. And so what are some of these principles? Well, there's the sowing and reaping principle, and we'll talk about these further in another episode, but the sowing and reaping principle, obviously, you sow a seed, and then you have to wait for it to harvest, and so there's a time delay there, and there's lots to do with the sowing principle. If you sow a seed, you know that you are going to get more than that one seed that you sowed. There's going to be a multiplication effect to it, and so that's the sowing principle. There's more to it, obviously, and then there's the timing laws, that is, times at which you plant based upon his patterns and his systems that are in place. Then there are solar patterns. You know, he has placed our planet in such a way that it's tilted on its axis and that it is rotates at a certain speed so that within 24 hours, a little over 24 hours, it rotates one time around and then it goes around the sun 365 days and a little bit around the earth, around the sun on its orbit, and is closer to the sun at sometimes and further away from sun. All of this is God's design so that there might be seasons and there might be patterns and that there might be solar exposure at different times over different parts of the globe. And when we follow his patterns and we understand these things and we then submit to them and work with them rather than against them, it creates an abundance. There are also weather patterns. There are winds that are in certain directions all across the globe. And if you're in one part of the hemisphere, you'll know that the wind comes from one direction. If you're a different part of the globe, you know that the wind comes from another direction entirely. And so there's these wind patterns all over. And I'll at another episode when I cover this more in depth, I'll be able to put up some charts of where these different wind patterns are and how it affects the flow of the air or the atmospheric pressure and all of these things. These are patterns and systems that God has put into place for our benefit. And when we take advantage of them and use them, then we are able to achieve abundance in our farming and our production. And then there are hydrological cycle patterns. This is the movement of water over the land and over the air and in the water. And there's hydrogen cycles, and there's the nitrogen cycle. That is the breakdown of nitrogen usable form. And there's the carbon cycle, which probably most of you are familiar with, where a plant through photosynthesis is able to create something palatable to the animal. The animal then is able to eat it, and then we are able to eat the animal, the carbon cycle. And there's the life cycle that affects prey and predator alike, and how each one in turn feeds the other one and is beneficial to the whole process. And you look at, for example, a parasite's life cycle a certain time, and if we work with that and realize that the parasite's life cycle a certain time, we're able to keep the animals that we rotate around the pasture healthier as a result of it. And so that's principle number three. Abundance is found in working with God's created laws, patterns, and cycles. And then principle number four is abundance and generosity are correlated. Abundance and generosity are correlated. This principle basically teaches that God has given to us an abundance, and when we access that abundance, we are obligated then to share that abundance. Proverbs chapter 11, verses 25 and 26 says, "The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it." Luke chapter 6, verse 38 says, "Give and it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over will be into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you." In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 and 7, it says, "But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver." So there again, we're using both principles there. We're using the whole idea of principle number four, the abundance giving us obligation to be generous, but also the idea of the sowing sparingly. It goes back to God's natural systems that he has set into place. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 13 and 14, it says, "For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also may supply your lack, that there may be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack." Now, this does not in any way imply that we are to have a communist society or that we are to live in communes. God is very clear that there is an amount of property that we are to have, and that property rights are essential to being able to achieve abundance. We couldn't achieve abundance without them. But once we have achieved that abundance, then it's our obligation to give that some abundance away. And in the permaculture world, of course, this principle is considered fair share. It's one of the three ethics of permaculture. And the other two being, we've got fair share, and we've got earth care, and we've got people care. And then, you know, I've heard it said this way one time, that a closed hand is not able to have anything leave it, but at the same time, it's not able to have anything come into it. And that's the way it is with abundance. If we really want to be able to have more abundance, then we need to be generous with the abundance that we have. And of course, living in the culture that we live in currently in the United States, if you're listening to this in the United States, we have just so many blessings, and we live in such abundance already. And there are people across the globe who are in similar state, and then there are others who may not be, who don't have the kind of abundance that we have. And it is obligation of us, when we have abundance, to be able to give. And I've mentioned this, of course, if you want to look at the earlier episodes when I was talking about the 10-step plan to financial abundance. One of the steps is to ensure that we give. And then, of course, when we have our legacy built, or we're building our legacy, to be able to give an additional to that. And so now what I want to do is I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about how we have implemented some of these principles into our own farm, and how we have developed some principles of our own to correlate with these four principles I've just mentioned. So first of all, one of the things that we like to do on our farm is we like to have symbiotic relationships, everything working together. If you look at nature, if you look at God's creation, you look at the patterns, there are symbiotic relationships that work together. For example, there are birds that usually follow herbivores on the Serengeti Plains in Africa. And the same thing we try to simulate on our own farm, where we have one animal follow another that is beneficial to it. The cows and the sheep on the pasture, they cut the cover crop, for example, in our garden in the early spring before they go out into the regular pasture. They go into our garden and eat down any of the weeds and any of the fall vegetation that was left over through the winter, so that they then are able to help us do the job in the garden. And so there's a symbiotic relationship there. And then, of course, there's a symbiotic relationship between the manure that they place on the ground and the bacteria that then decomposes that. And same thing on the pasture. You've got the decomposition of the organic matter that comes out their back end and goes into the soil as the microorganisms decompose that and enable it to be workable. So there's a symbiotic relationship there. And then secondly is multifunctionality. Everything has multiple functions. I have to always laugh when I think about this, but we had this dog igloo. You probably have seen them before. They look just like an igloo, and they're, you know, for dogs to go in. We bought one of these for really super cheap, and we use that for everything. We had our dog in it at one time. We also have had goats in it. We've had chickens in it. We've had lamb in it. We've had just about every creature on our farm has been in it at one point or another. And that's the way in which we use things over and over again. So there's multi-functions to any one thing. And that way we're able to use more of our space more frequently and get by with less. And so another principle that we follow in reference to this is conserve, store, and reuse energy. We obviously use compost piles, and we've got old tires that we found back in the woods that we use as beds, and we capture solar energy through our greenhouse, and we use mulch and cover crops to cover the soil so that evaporation doesn't deplete the moisture content and continues to add organic matter to the soil. And so this is ways in which we conserve, store, and reuse energy. And then there's intensive systems in small spaces. And by the way, many of these principles in particular came from Sepp Holzer's book on permaculture. And you can access that or find a link to that under the resource pages recommended book reading list on the website. But intensive systems in small spaces. We use beds rather than rows in our gardens because you can more thickly plant them in beds, and especially when they're double dug or deep beds. And this also allows for multi-species, multi-polyculture, which we'll get to in a minute, or rather than a monoculture, a polyculture in the beds themselves. And allows us to use more space. If you think about it for a minute, if you've got a row, and in that row maybe the row is a foot wide, but then you've got a foot walking path, you've only got planting for 1 foot. Whereas if you have a 3 foot bed and a 1 foot walking path, you've got 3 feet that's not compacted there that is used as a bed. And that's what we do. We do 3 foot rows or 3 foot beds with a 1 foot walking path in between each of the beds. And this allows us, of course, to be able to access the bed from both sides. And it's also small enough that you can kind of jump over it without having to step across it. With many people use a 4 foot bed, we found that seems to be a little bit more complicated and a little bit more difficult to work around than a 3 foot bed. And besides, when you do a 3 foot bed, you can do a 3 foot by 3 foot section and have a 1 square yard of bed planted in something, which we found to be pretty helpful. And then you can multi-use the area for small areas, and we continue to replant things. And then you got paddock management, where you have intensive grazing and you move them off that paddock. And so this is another example of intensive systems in small places. And then working with God's design, as I've already mentioned, some of the principles just above, and working with the various systems and patterns that God has put into place, all the cycles, and using those things to our advantage and taking advantage of the sun, the way it hits the earth, and the angles, and the way Anisha set up the greenhouses so that it's faced in that direction. Or you might put up different types of wind barriers for the garden so that the items in the garden aren't overthrown by wind, and all these different patterns, taking advantage of those and understanding them to be able to achieve the abundance you need in the garden. And then use of edge effect. I don't know if you've ever noticed this or not, but usually around the edges is where there's the most productivity. If you go to along an edge, in fact, right around our house, my wife's grandmother owns the land, and she owns it all the way up to a river. And on the edge of that river, you can't even get to the river because it's so overgrown with debris and brush and various kinds of things. It hasn't been very well tended. Just because it's so far away from everything. But the idea is that there's a great deal of lusciousness to borders. And so you can hear people talk about key lines, and you can talk about different ways in which one area meets another on the property. And it's on these edges where there's a great deal of potential on people's lands. And we're just beginning to scratch the surface of this on our own farm. And I'm starting to see some of the ways in which we can make this really even more beneficial. And so using edge effect is important. And then diversity, polyculture versus monoculture. You know, we are not a spinach farm. We're not a beef farm. We have a lot of different animals, a lot of different plants, a lot of different kinds of vegetation. We're always looking to expand the diversity that we have on our farm. More and more polyculture is what we want. And this is very unusual. If you look at the way in which most things are grown today, even if you look into the organic movement, you can have organic lettuce farm where all they produce is lettuce. It might be organic, but it's not a polyculture. And if you look at God's design, things are grown together. There's a diversity to it. You never find, you know, one species that totally invades it. Anytime, in fact, you find one species that, to the exclusion of all others, you know that it's been messed with by man, or man has planted a bunch of trees there, all of the same kind. Because if you go to a forest or you go to anywhere else and you observe these things, you realize that God is a God of diversity and a polyculture. And then, of course, providing a surplus. We've got to consume less than we produce. And this is where abundance comes in. And as God provides for us, we then are able to provide for others and continue to build the process and leave a legacy through our farm. So I want to encourage you to start with something. You may be in a situation where all you have is a patio on a third-story apartment building in a city, and you're listening to this. Well, start somewhere. Go outside and observe some of the patterns that you see by the wind and by the sun on that patio, and then take advantage of those and begin to implement some ways of creating some food abundance of your own so that you're not as dependent upon others and you're able to start providing for yourself by using the principles that God has laid out in His Word and through creation so that you can develop some measure of food production for yourself. Well, with that, that pretty much ends this episode. Hope you found some value to it. This has been episode 6 of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?